This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Penguin Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Victory's Price by Alexander Freed. Read for you by January Lavoie. Part 1. Indigenous Songs of Lost Civilizations. Chapter 1. Naval Hymns of the Old Republic. 1.
This war is over,
the Admiral said.
We know it, and soon the Empire will too.
General Hera Syndulla almost believed him, but reminded herself, only rebellions thrive on hope. Republics need sturdier foundations. The assembly room smelled of ozone and glittered like the interior of a sapphire, each facet a hologram flashing and wavering as transmission streams threaded the galaxy and manifested in the New Republic's military leadership. 11 months prior, following the Battle of Endor, when the war had first been declared over, such a gathering would have been unthinkable. Now, thanks to the twin miracles of a newly reclaimed hyperspace comm network and the massive receiver systems of the X-Star Destroyer Deliverance, the architects of the rebellion's victory exchanged reports like conquerors dividing spoils.
The core of the enemy force has retreated,
Gael Akbar went on, and flapped a holographic hand at an unseen assistant. A star map sprang up at the center of the amphitheater, and ghostly heads, along with the heads of the flesh and blood attendees near Hera, refocused their attention.
Coruscant remains under Imperial control, but the fleeing Loyalist armadas have ceded the rest of their territory to us. That leaves the warlords and opportunists isolated. Eliminating the last of them will take time, but few remain a serious threat. Our battle groups are even now removing the holdouts' fleet building and transport capabilities.
Red blotches flashed onto the map, stains of Imperial presence on the galaxy. Blue arrows, each indicating an allied force, encircled the red. Hera recognized the larger occupied territories, the Anoat sector, the Falthine sector, the Krenthoan Abyss. Coruscant, where the Imperial Regent controlled a single blockaded planet and trillions of lives, glowed softly in the map's center. A faint mark like a blood drop represented all that was left of the Imperial presence in the Nithlite Array, where the Deliverance had spent the past week smashing blockades. It was, at a glance, a simple map with a clear message of New Republic supremacy. Yet fainter lines suggested a more complicated story. Trails from a dozen points led into a region where individual stars became a haze of fog in the poorly charted western reaches. What was left of the true Empire's military, what the Admiral had called the Loyalist forces, was secreted there, on the edge of the unknown regions. Hera squared her shoulders and spoke in a voice that offered no challenge, no skepticism. Akbar viewed the war in ways foreign to her, focusing on the ebb and flow of fleets like tides, rather than the struggles of mortals on the ground. But she had come to recognize the artistry of his designs, even when she disputed their wisdom. How close are we to finding the enemy's hidden base? She asked. The Admiral smiled broadly and bowed his bulbous head.
We're launching probe droids as swiftly as Troif and Metalorn can manufacture them. Chief of Intelligence Kraken will speak to other leads under investigation. Shall we begin with the division reports?
The conference took on a familiar shape, and though Hera listened to what was said, filed away every word in the whirring part of her brain that cross-referenced tactical updates and coordinates for strategic significance, she found her attention less on the briefs and more on the emotional tenor of the room. Aaron Kraken spoke of the Empire's efforts to remain hidden, cited rumors of a harsh world occupied by legions of stormtroopers, and there was a predator's excitement beneath the frostbitten surface. General Rhea appeared exhausted, but her mouth curled into a smile as she spoke of the campaign to drive the Imperial Royalist Coalition off Zagobah. Admiral Horrortes' snuffling and grunting was harder to parse, but Hera thought she recognized a weary resolve as he spoke of the sacrifices of the Unerring and its escorts to destroy a conspiracy orchestrated by one of Palpatine's mad viziers. Hera began shifting focus to her staff, felt discomfort behind her through a hint of human pheromones or movement in the air, when Akbar called her name.
And your battle group, General? Nice Lide is secure?
Under control, at least, she replied. Two carriers under Major John will stay to support the local militia. Now that the battle group has punched through the blockade, the Deliverance is returning to its primary objective.
Back to the hunt?
Arorte growled, the base entangled in static. Back to the hunt, Hera agreed. We're continuing to work with New Republic intelligence. She cast a nod toward Kraken, neither expecting nor receiving acknowledgement, to locate the 204th Imperial Fighter Wing. Since that unit's departure from Cerberon, we've confirmed only a handful of sightings, but remain confident we're on the right trail. Nightflight slowed us down. From here on out, though...
Your last report suggested the 204th Shadow Wing is working with the Loyalists.
This interruption came in a voice Hera didn't recognize. A dark-haired man in civilian dress stood 6 meters to the right of Akbar, alone on his holographic dais. Codes scrolled beneath his feet indicating his transmission's point of origin. Chandrilla. The temporary New Republic capital. Chancellor Mothma had been unable to attend the conference, but she was making her presence known. We believe they've made contact, yes, Hera said. That's based on comm tracing. General Kraken can provide specifics.
Then shouldn't the 204th be in hiding with the other Loyalist units? Your pursuit is taking you far from the western reaches.
Hera swallowed her immediate dislike of the man's tone. It wasn't an unreasonable query. We aren't certain what the 204th is doing in this part of the galaxy. However, I'm confident that whatever the particulars, Shadow Wing represents a real threat. Since the Battle of Endor, they've been responsible for numerous military setbacks and lost lives, not the least of which were the genocide on Necronus and the Cerberon Uprising. The unit has proven its capacity time and again to inflict unexpected harm. We shouldn't doubt such harm is ongoing. She was surprised by her own passion, nearly as surprised as Chancellor Mothma's aide, who had stiffened and retreated almost out of view of his holocam. You're among friends, she reminded herself. Maybe you should act like it? She smiled with what she hoped was humility before continuing. That said, I am equally confident this operation will be over soon. Shadow Wing has nowhere to run, and despite some recent losses, there's no one in the galaxy better equipped than Alphabet, than our intelligence working group, to find and neutralize this foe. Again, she had the sense of discomfort from someone behind her. She suspected she knew the source, but she had one more point to make. If by chance the Empire's fleet is located before we can find the 204th, the Deliverance retains the flexibility to disengage and support an engagement elsewhere. But I'm not worried about choosing one over the other. Shadow Wing can be defeated. The Empire as a whole can too. Mothma's aide nodded swiftly. The military leaders were less attentive, though Hera knew better than to feel slighted. Each had come to the conference with their own concerns, and each had worked with the others long enough to have a measure of trust. If Hera told them the 204th was a threat, they would believe her. If she told them she would end that threat, they would believe that too. The conference moved to other reports from other regions of the galaxy and ended with inspirational words from Akbar that Hera largely neglected to hear. Afterward, the holograms vanished with a flash of light and a popping noise. When they were gone, Hera blinked away spots and heard the humming of the Deliverance's reactor. The voices of her staff rose, and she issued swift orders as they all moved toward the door. She was proposing a comm array adjustment to Stormvein when a young man made as if to break away. Without interrupting herself, without turning her head, she placed a hand lightly on the man's shoulder and pushed her fingertips into the fabric of his flight suit. He stopped. She felt the tension in his muscles. He was olive-skinned and wore his brown hair neat, contrasting with his unshaven cheeks and chin. His frame was slender and taut, like that of a jungle cat seemingly too thin for the size of its prey. When Hera finished dispensing commands and was left alone with the youth, she faced him fully and asked, "You're not going to make a liar out of me, are you?"
"General?"
Will Lark said. "Is your unit ready for the 204th? She kept her tone matter-of-fact. Will would take her seriously regardless, so better not to unduly pressure him. "Are the squadrons up to the fight?" She'd been monitoring Will since he'd taken command of the Deliverance's starfighter wing. She'd spent an hour each week conferring with him, less time than she'd have liked, more than her aides approved of, and nearly as much time speaking to the individual squadron commanders about his leadership. She knew the status of the pilots, and she knew that Will, despite his inexperience, was making fine choices regarding training and deployment. She wanted to know what he knew, however. He frowned, and she waited for an answer.
"Yes," he said at last. "They are. We needed the time. Reconfiguring the squadrons came with a cost, but they're working together now. The pilots who haven't faced Shadow Wing are doing their research. The ones who have, they want another shot, and they won't get more ready sitting in the hangar."
"Can they win?" Hera asked.
"In a fair fight?"
Will smiled wanly, looking too tired for his age.
"I think maybe. But going at Shadow Wing head to head hasn't ever gone well before."
"I'll do everything I can to give us an edge," Hera said. "If it comes to it, though, we may have to strike in less than ideal circumstances." She saw resistance on Will's face and pushed on. "If Shadow Wing really is one of the only loyalist units operating outside Coruscant or the Western Reaches, that makes them one of few wild cards the Empire has left to play. That makes them
valuable."
"You're learning," she thought, and felt a twinge of sadness. She tried to sound encouraging anyway. "Exactly. I don't want them still operating when it's time for the last battle." They stepped together out of the assembly room and into the corridors of the Deliverance. Hera ignored a chill at the burnished black floor paneling, the pale lighting grids and geometric doorways. The crimson emergency indicators had been disabled, but the New Republic refit had proceeded too quickly to make the vessel feel like anything other than an Imperial Star Destroyer. Somewhere in a distant star system, Hera mused, Commodore Augate was on the bridge of a newly built Nadiri Starhawk, the pride of the New Republic fleet, symbol of everything righteous, built from dismantled Star Destroyers into something more powerful yet. If things had gone differently, if the Lodestar hadn't been obliterated over Troyth and a replacement required immediately, Hera might have been aboard a Starhawk herself instead of a hastily overhauled death machine. She didn't begrudge Augate her command, but it was hard to walk the Deliverance without bad memories. Will matched her pace.
"The last battle," he echoed. "You believe what the Admiral was saying?"
"You have doubts?"
"I just remember what we heard after Endor. It's all been close to ending for a year now.
There was no bitterness in his voice.
I don't blame anyone for being wrong, but I trust your judgment more than most.
She'd been as guilty as anyone in believing the war would end after the Emperor's death. She'd known better, and still she'd believed. She'd longed for a return to her family, and she fought through that yearning now to answer Will as honestly as she could.
I believe it, she said. I keep telling myself it's optimism, but the facts add up. The Empire can't keep fighting.
Will smiled thinly. Hera wasn't sure if he wasn't satisfied with her answer or if something else troubled him. She didn't have a chance to inquire before he said,
We should hear from the others soon. Last word was sometime within 6 hours.
Good. We'll talk as soon as anything comes in. Will seemed to take the statement as a dismissal, and Hera let him go. That had been her chance to ask what was bothering him, and she suspected she'd berate herself later for missing it. But she had battle plans to concoct, and drills to run, and a chief engineer who needed replacing. There was far, far too much to do to bring about the Empire's end, and though Will's troubles were as real and vital as anyone's, all of her problems were urgent, Shadow Wing most of all. Because in truth, she'd held back during the war conference. She didn't know what the 204th was doing, but the rumors escaping isolated systems were chilling. Too horrifying, too unlikely, and too poorly sourced to discuss in the open. Very soon, within 6 hours, perhaps, Hera would know if her nightmares had become reality. Nath Tenzin bunched a beefy fist around wine-red cloth and yanked the curtain aside, only to find himself staring down the protruding nose of a Hanemth. The reptilian humanoid emitted something between a hiss and a yelp, then slipped with surprising agility under the crook of Nath's arm, past Chasna Chattuck, and into the crowd packing the shellmonger's tent of the Circus of Mortal Appetites.
You making friends there?
Chas asked. Nath didn't let go of the curtain as he glanced toward the Thelan woman. An oversized brown jacket buried her compact, muscular body, leaving her green crest of hair to sprout like a seedling.
It's what I do,
he replied, and moved into the dark stairwell. Chas grunted as she took the curtain and followed. Nath inhaled as he ascended, refamiliarizing himself with long-forgotten scents. Tyanese cooking oils, whirlbat viscera, the waxy odor of Kryptokian silk. A memory of Piter, half-naked and spun into a cocoon, flashed through his mind.
The old crew had some fun here back in the day,
he thought, and grinned as they pushed into another pavilion. The crowd was thinner and more subdued, lingering around the edges of a space full of yellow smoke. Low altars were piled with data chips and candles and rotting fruit, while the few merchants swapped cheap necklaces for credits. Nath barely paused to orient himself before heading for a gap in the curtains at the far side, but he slowed as he noticed Chas eyeing the hawkers and the altars.
You didn't say this was a religious thing,
she muttered. Nath shrugged.
Way of dressing up the business. Oracle's got a style, but past that, she's just another info broker.
Chas took a meandering route past an altar, then back to Nath's side.
It's all good. Let me know when I should start shooting.
If,
Nath corrected, though he couldn't suppress a smile.
If you should start shooting.
Whatever.
Nath laughed, but he watched Chas out of the corner of his eye as they pressed into the gap. Something was wrong with the girl. Something new, different from the rat's nest of unconfessed self-loathing, bitter fury, and suicidal impulses she'd lived in when they'd first met. It had been wrong since Cerberon, and if he'd been closer to her, he might have known whether it would be a problem. As things were, well, Chas was at the bottom of his list of troubled wingmates.
Captain Tenzin,
a desiccated voice said as they emerged into a hollow. Circular screens hung on leather cords, framing the meter-high neck of the woman who sat in the room's center. Amber eyes stared out of a chalky head drifting from side to side, as if the weight of her skull might cause her neck to collapse at any moment.
How long has it been since your last confession? 3 years? 4?
You're a few years short, though. I can't say I blame you,
Nath said.
Days go by fast, then they crawl. You get my message?
I did. You have more patrol routes, perhaps?
Nath climbed over a low bench and lowered his bulk to the seat. He kept his expression game and tried not to show his surprise.
Haven't been with the Empire a long time,
he said, and resisted the urge to add,
You must be the last one to hear. Not reassuring for an oracle. What do you say about some New Republic secrets instead?
Easier to find, not worth as much. What do you have to offer?
His instinct was to check Chas's reaction before moving on. He forced himself to meet the Oracle's gaze and lowered his voice.
Troop movements through hut space. Could be handy for anyone doing business in those parts.
The Oracle adjusted one of her hanging screens.
I think not,
she said.
That's more like it. Still knows how to bargain.
He leaned forward.
Intelligence decryption codes for Priority 3 transmissions. Good for a week. A lot a person could learn in that time.
Better, but insufficient,
the Oracle said. The thin neck drifted backward and amber eyes rolled. Then the stalk snapped straight and eyes focused on Nath again.
You have connections within New Republic intelligence.
Something like that,
Nath said.
I am New Republic intelligence.
Nasha Gravas, the late Karen Aiden's protege, had come to him after Cerberon and asked him to liaise between intelligence and Syndulla's battle group. Nath had agreed, and now he had a medal, authority, and access to a treasure trove of classified intel. Turned out almost dying to save a planet of billions came with a few rewards.
Well?
The Oracle asked.
10 names,
Nath said.
Undercover operatives of my choosing. No guarantee any of them will be useful, but that's the fun of it.
He watched the Oracle as he listened to Chas's grunt. If she doubted he was authorized to make the trade, she was right. He was confident she wouldn't do anything about it. The Oracle's eyes closed and she swiped the back of her hand across the hanging screens. They clacked against one another, swinging from side to side and gaining unnatural velocity. It appeared inevitable that one would strike the Oracle, but none ever did, and soon they lost momentum again. The Oracle opened her eyes and waited for them to still completely before speaking.
The ink-spotted Lord, Keeper of Secrets, will accept your sacrifice,
she said.
The ink-spotted Lord is generous, as always,
Nath returned. The Oracle handed him a data pad, and he entered a series of names and coordinates. After he was done, the Oracle slid the pad into the folds of the enclosure's curtains.
Now,
Nath said,
about the blessing we came for?
The Croynar Sector,
the Oracle said. Nath waited. The Oracle said nothing. Chas cleared her throat. Nath raised a hand and said,
Narrow it down to one system for us?
Situations change rapidly. The sector will be enough for your needs,
the Oracle said.
Now do we start shooting?
Chas asked. Nath stood, feeling his knees creak, and waved Chas off.
If the ink-spotted Lord says the sector is enough, then the sector is enough. You've always dealt fair with me, Madam Oracle, haven't you?
I act in accordance with my master's wishes,
the Oracle said.
Be on your way, Captain Tencent, hero of Troyth.
Guess you heard the news after all, he thought.
He wrapped an arm around Chas's shoulders, escorting her from the scene as firmly as he could without inviting a fight.
"It's how business is done here," he murmured.
She shrugged away his arm and they returned to the stairs.
"So why are we the ones out here if we're just reading a script and taking whatever we get? Doesn't intelligence have agents for this?"
"You'd hope so, but they're stretched thin. Besides, they trust me to find Shadow Wing."
Chas almost choked on a laugh.
"They trust you, do they?"
"Close enough,"
he said, and led them through the labyrinth of tents and stairways and rope ladders. The circus of mortal appetites was busy as Nath had ever seen it, and louder. No one feared Imperial patrols or snitches anymore, and the New Republic didn't engender the same concerns. He was nearly to the landing pads, strolling beneath the dim blue lamps of the Chamber of Lusty Hollows, when he nearly crashed into a human broad as a wall and dressed in a coat resembling an inside-out bantha, all intestinal tubing and patches of fur.
"Captain Tenzant,"
the coat's owner said. Beady eyes stared at Nath.
"Like a leaf adrift, he falls to ground, rots in autumn and 'neath winter rime, until decay becomes life anew, and he is home among the branches once more."
The face was distantly familiar. The poetry more so, but Nath struggled to attach a name to the half-remembered giant and settled for declaring,
"Been a while, brother."
He saw the curl in the man's lip and the tremor in his hand as it hovered at his hip.
"Might be spoiling for a fight," Nath thought, "but he knows he's likely to lose. Or he's waiting for backup."
Neither notion pleased Nath.
"Hargis!"
The name hit Nath and he grinned, recalling a dozen conversations from his days running protection rackets as a TIE pilot. Hargis had always paid promptly, kept his head down, and caused little trouble. But that had been long ago, and if people didn't change, circumstances certainly did.
"Hargis, you've gotten old. You and the crew still working the butt end of the Corellian run? With a few changes. Nice not to pay for the privilege."
Hargis's eyes peered over Nath's shoulder.
"Here you're a big shot now. Big-time hero. Word really does get around. Lady at the docks gave us an entry discount."
Chas had shifted her stance, ready to run or to pounce.
"Now?"
she asked.
"Looks like,"
Nath agreed. He couldn't locate Hargis's backup while focusing on Hargis himself. He hoped Chas understood her role as he brought his fist into the giant's chin, feeling his own knuckles bruise as his foe's head snapped back and Hargis's hand fell away from the blaster on his hip. The crowd jostled and yelled, and Nath hadn't reclaimed his balance by the time he felt Chas's palm between his shoulders, pushing him down and forward as she cried, "Go!" He heard the sizzle of blaster bolts overhead and felt heat. He went. Chas was on his heels, close enough that he caught a whiff of her sweat.
"Three of them back there," she said. "Two meat, one droid. Nasty little hunter probe."
They plowed through another set of curtains. They could have split up to hide in the throng, but Nath figured they weren't more than a minute, three tops, from the landing pad. Better to run. Racing through the food pavilion, he shouldered aside a merchant laden with trays of fried beetles and spared a glance behind him. He glimpsed rough movement, crowds shuffling away, the glint of metal, but nothing his brain could render in detail.
"At least they're not shooting anymore," he thought. "Mob's giving us cover."
He grabbed his comlink mid-stride.
"Get ready for takeoff," he growled. "Coming in hot."
He didn't wait for a reply before swapping the link for the grip of his blaster. 30 seconds later, they were outside the pavilions, clear of the crowds and dashing over the slick marble bridge extending from the cliff face to the landing pad. A barrage of particle bolts chased them as Nath prayed for traction. His eyes were on his boots, but he smiled as he felt a wash of heat from the pad ahead. When he looked up, the U-Wing transport was a meter off the ground, its loading door open. Chas was in first. She spun and hauled Nass after her, groaning with effort, while blaster bolts splashed against the doorframe and splattered sparks down Nass's neck. "Return fire!" he howled toward the cockpit. The deck trembled, and the door slid shut. The enemy barrage increased in intensity. The U-Wing turned and tugged against the planet's gravity. Nath pushed past Chass and in one motion swung into the cockpit and dropped into the co-pilot's chair. Through the hazy viewport, Nath could see Hargus and his associates at the far end of the bridge, one of them, a hairy brute bigger than Hargus, hoisting something onto his shoulder.
Is that a blasted rotary cannon?
If it was, it had enough firepower to shatter the U-Wing's viewport and skewer Nath on the fragments. He fumbled at the controls and turned to the woman seated beside him. She was dressed in a cloak and loose gray cloth that might have been sewn from stained sheets, and her face was a patchwork of chitinous plates, some a deep violet, others a lighter mauve marbled with white veins, some chipped and discolored, others polished and bright. Deep-set eyes peered out from that map of a splintered world, gazing into the bedlam ahead.
"There a reason we're not shooting back?" he asked.
"Not of the Empire,"
Cairo said in her guttural whisper. Nath swore and charged the guns.
"Not friendly, either."
He adjusted the power and switched to manual targeting. From 30 meters away, he could turn Hargus and his goons into ash.
"And then what? They knew you were a New Republic hero. You want to stain that pretty reputation? You think your bosses will be happy with that diplomatic outreach?"
He could handle the damage control.
"Not to mention Hargus has a legitimate grievance. He deserved to die for it."
It didn't sound like the Nath he knew. He could hear Chass securing something in the main cabin. Hargus's rotary cannon was pointed at the U-Wing. Nath swore, aimed the U-Wing's weapons, and pulled the trigger. The U-Wing's cannon flashed and the marble bridge shattered, replaced by plumes of dust as shards fell into the abyss. He couldn't hear the reaction of Hargus and the goons, could barely make out their silhouettes at the span's far end, but their next volley missed the U-Wing by 10 meters. The ship rose and Nath returned his eyes to the console, checking the scanner. No approaching vessels, no energy pulses or missile locks.
"You're going soft,"
he thought. No doubt Hargus was thinking the same. Maybe Chass, too.
"Next time," he said to Kairos, "you shoot back if someone's shooting at us."
The woman said nothing, adjusting the U-Wing's power distribution as if she hadn't heard. That didn't surprise Nath. She'd barely said a word since emerging from her healing slumber in Cerberon. He hadn't a clue what to make of her, whether she'd really changed from the masked predator she'd been, or if putting a face and a voice to her actions simply gave the old killer a fresh look. Sooner or later, someone would have to ask her what the hell was going on. Someone who could wrest an answer from her.
"Quite a team we've got,"
he muttered, and grabbed the headset off the console. He had a message from the Oracle for the Deliverance, and a long journey ahead to see what it might mean. Three. Hyperspace roiled around the A-Wing Interceptor, cosmic energies licking its viewport like seafoam. Will Lark felt the vessel's engines pulse in time with his breath, his worn seat creak and flex with his every motion. Once he'd found lightspeed travel wondrous and terrifying. Now it was almost meditative, a tranquil moment before a thunderclap. How many more times would he travel this way? How many more jumps before he'd fulfilled his promises to home and the New Republic? An alarm chimed rapidly and he was rid of the thoughts, instinctively stroking the console before deactivating the signal. A countdown indicated his return to real space in less than a minute.
"All ships,"
he called, thumbing the comm.
"Prepare for arrival in Midgore."
There were only three star systems in the desolate Kroinar sector with any possible strategic value, any known structures, extractable resources, or life forms. That meant that if the intelligence Nath had transmitted to the Deliverance was correct, there was a 1 in 3 chance Will would find Shadow Wing waiting in the pale green light of Midgore's sun. The star system had little to recommend it, but an old electromagnetic siphon could have been a target if Shadow Wing was desperate for technology or scrap metal. Voices replied,
"Hail Squadron ready."
"Flare Squadron ready."
"Wild Squadron ready."
More than 30 fighters ready to engage, but no Alphabet Squadron, not with Nath and the others still en route. The Deliverance itself was holding back in case of a trap. The mission was, as General Syndulla had put it, heavy reconnaissance. He drew a breath and spoke again.
"Stay in contact. Charge your weapons, but don't engage without instructions."
He heard his own nervousness, but didn't try to suppress it. It wasn't his duty to be fearless, only to inspire the best in the pilots.
"If they're out there, they're just as on edge as we are. They're very good flyers, but they're flesh and blood, not legends."
"Human blood, too."
The trilling soprano of Esovin, flare leader, came through.
"The thin stuff. No offense, Commander."
There was a scattering of awkward laughs, mostly from Flare.
"None taken," Will said.
Flare Squadron's X-Wing pilots hadn't met Shadow Wing yet. They were newcomers, summoned by General Syndulla to support the mission in place of Vanguard. Will couldn't blame Esovin for misjudging the emotional tenor of the moment. But Hail Squadron had lost many of its Y-Wing bombers at Cerberon. Wild Squadron, too, had seen colleagues killed by Shadow Wing, formed from the remnants of Will's hodgepodge assault force of skimmers and cloud cars on Troyth. The squadron had been rebuilt from decimation and become a place for misfit pilots and misfit starfighters. Hale and Wild both viscerally understood Shadow Wing's threat. Like Alphabet, they'd suffered slow attrition and swift, brutal massacres, and they needed more than cocky humor. They needed their traumas acknowledged.
"We've been training for this," he said. "They have no idea what we've become."
Will prayed he wasn't leading them all to their deaths. He felt a shameful relief that Nath and Chass and Kairos weren't present, as if their lives were more valuable than those of pilots he knew less intimately, even if he hadn't seen much of them lately, even if things with Nath had been difficult since Cerberon. The glow of hyperspace faded as the jolt of deceleration hit. Will's harness dug into his chest as stars fell into place and the jade light of Midgore winked from the darkness. His head swam and he looked to the console, trying to parse the readings as his instruments recalibrated themselves.
"Picking something up."
Will heard Vitali, curt and professional, the woman he'd flirted with, almost befriended before he'd become her commanding officer on Troyth.
"3, maybe 4 ships."
"I hear you, Wild 2," he said.
Will adjusted his sensors, felt the reassuring click of toggles through his gloves, and confirmed Vitali's assessment. His comm scanner flickered, suggesting encrypted Imperial chatter in the system.
"Wild and Hale, hold position,"
he said.
"Flare, with me for a better look."
Affirmative responses came in. Will opened his throttle and swung his vessel toward the bright marks on his scanner. When his course was set, the universe seemed still and his roaring thrusters impotent. In the vastness of real space, the only signs he was in motion were his console indicators and, far behind, the lights of the other starfighters. It was almost a minute before he could pick out specks against the darkness. His sensors estimated the distant vessel's speed and mass. They were too large to be fighters, but smaller than frigates. Gunships, maybe, but Will couldn't guess at their specifications. He didn't have the encyclopedic knowledge Irika Quell had possessed. Quell. Will had seen many friends die in the war. But the loss of Quell was different from the loss of Sonogari or Satanique.
"I need an ID," he said. "Anyone recognize them?"
One in the back looks like an Imperial cargo hauler,
Gordansk replied. Gordansk had an answer for everything, and half the time he was right.
Running hot, too. Maybe a radiation leak.
Will altered his approach, angling to one side. The specks of the Imperial vessels were flickering around the edges, as if their shields were alive with energy, or... He checked his sensors again, noted the heat signatures.
Keep your distance,
he said.
I'm going for a flyby.
He sent a burst of power to his thrusters and adjusted the comm again as he accelerated toward the enemy formation. The garbled sounds of encrypted messages echoed in his cockpit. He squinted and leaned forward until the specks began to crystallize. Boxy black forms, clearly Imperial but lacking the predatory angles of a star destroyer. Flames and electrical arcs danced along their sides and spilled into vacuum.
This is Starfighter Commander Will Lark to the Imperial vessels. Please report your status.
It could have been a trap, he knew. Bait left by Shadow Wing to lure in New Republic ships. The Imperial cargo vessels could have been rigged to detonate, or TIE fighters could have been hiding a short distance away. An answer came, too distorted for him to understand.
This is Will Lark. Say again.
This is Captain Altavar Misk of the freighter Diamond Tor. We are in need of assistance and are prepared to surrender. Repeat, we surrender.
Will had entered firing range. A flash of light caught his attention and he swiveled his head, fearing a cannon barrage and instead witnessing an eruption of fire and molten metal from the port side of a cargo vessel. It wasn't a trap. He didn't think it was a trap. It might be something worse.
Captain Misk,
he said.
What happened to your convoy?
The voice hesitated, then replied, interrupted by bursts of static and mechanical whines.
We were in a battle. TIE fighters attacked us, dismantled our escorts in minutes, then moved on.
Why?
Will asked.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. We were operating under the protection of the Yomo Council. One of the other factions must have taken exception, decided to come after...
The voice stopped speaking. Will thought at first that transmission problems had shut it down, but then he heard heavy breathing and what could only be weeping.
Imperial against Imperial,
the voice said.
That's what the war is now. Family killing family. Oaths unraveling. How can it... Are you going to help us?
Will flinched as if struck.
Of course. Of course we'll help. Stay where you are. We've got more ships incoming.
He transmitted an all-clear to the Deliverance and ordered his squadrons into range to assist with evacuation and damage control. He tried to keep the fighters from exposing themselves without compromising the rescue. It wasn't a trap, not one set by the Diamond Tor and the other cargo ships, but that was no guarantee the danger had passed. As Will worked, he thought of Captain Misk's words and what Shadow Wing was capable of, and all the Imperial atrocities committed after the Battle of Endor. He'd witnessed none of them at the time, but he'd read about Operation Cinder, the murder of worlds like Necronus, that had posed no threat to the Empire. He wondered what horrors were in store for all of them now, when the Empire was truly desperate. Chapter 2. Silt Sea Threnody. Necronus Burial Song. 1. The planet below the bulk freighter was a smudge of brown and green, enlivened only by three rose-colored moons whose movement was visible unassisted if one watched closely enough, as a person might watch clouds known to be in motion but tranquil at a glance. The freighter's view screen accompanied this minor exhibition with a steady scroll of data down the margins, indicating the drift of debris off the freighter's port side and energy readings from the planet's surface that were almost certainly jury-rigged deflectors. But Soren kept his attention on the centermost moon. It gave him the appearance, he believed, of a man in deep concentration.
This is Colonel Soren Keyes of the 204th Imperial Fighter Wing and the carrier Yadiz. In response to the Yomo Council's treasonous actions, its defiance of Grand Admiral Sloan's order to direct assets to the Dalegoth sector, its refusal to acknowledge the Empire's rightful regent on Coruscant, and its alliance with the Shi'ar Tun Syndicate, among others, we have been sent to bring retribution to your world.
The speech did not require deep concentration, but he owed his crew and his victims the appearance of gravity. He drew a long breath through his nostrils, smelled the stinging copper odor of old ore halls, and went on.
Over the next 24 hours, the planet Fedovoy End will be rendered uninhabitable. The Yomo Council will die with the territory it usurped. Governor Brashan, General Tula, and their criminal cohorts will be erased from history. This is not negotiable. Surrender will not be accepted. Every traitor will be punished.
This is Operation Cinder,
he thought, though he did not say the words aloud. He'd perfected the speech over the past weeks and found the elaboration unnecessary. He shifted his gaze from the rose moon to scan the bridge crew. Cadet Kura, Ensign Kura, he had to remind himself since he'd authorized her promotion, leaned too far over her tactical console, attempting to conceal her anxiety. Lieutenant Herorius looked frequently to the bejoweled Captain Nenves as that man tapped his cane against the antique deck plating. Soren heard the soft breathing of his own aide behind him. All as he expected. He returned his gaze to the screen.
To the rest of the inhabitants of this world, I offer a choice. Once you were Imperials, not in name alone, as now, but in heart and hierarchy. You can be so again, but only if you accept the demise of your disloyal superiors and the planet you now occupy. Reaffirm your allegiance to the true Empire. Abandon Fedovoy End. Join us in orbit, and you may assist the 204th in its mission.
Its mission to purge every world tainted by Imperials who dared to escape the Emperor's shadow.
Or if you are unqualified for such duties, you will be escorted to a rendezvous with the Imperial fleet. Either way, Fedovoy End must die. Refuse, and you die with it.
It was a valid choice for some, for those who had ships to fly, who weren't held at blaster point by minions of the Yomo Council. Yet among those people capable of joining Shadow Wing, some would accept death as the alternative. They would be loyal to the Yomo Council for ideological or pragmatic reasons. They would wish to fight for their planet, bound to their home by ancestral ties. They would believe Soren's threats a bluff, or his forces beatable, or the remnants of the true Empire so desiccated as to be unworthy of their pledge. There was enough pity left in Soren that he took no pleasure in their inevitable deaths, but he did not flinch from his task. He had given the 204th to the likes of Grand Admiral Sloan for a reason, and that reason hadn't involved any delusions that the Empire might avert its own gradual obliteration. Instead, the 204th's troubles in Cerberon had reaffirmed his belief that Shadow Wing required purpose to survive, and had taught him the moral necessity of looking beyond his own unit and taking responsibility for all Imperial soldiers who crossed his path. Now, purging world after world, he saw his people cleave to the duty they'd been given. When they recruited newcomers into their fold, they celebrated. When they shot down TIE fighters and melted cities, they believed themselves patriots, avenging themselves on traitors who'd cost them a swift victory after the Emperor's death. The task he had been given by Admiral Sloan was not the task Soren would have chosen, yet it sufficed. He needed the true Empire to keep his people alive. At least, until it doomed them all.
Has there been any reply? Any signal from the planet?
He asked. Herorius spun from the comm scan station.
No reply, Colonel. Reading energy spikes from the surface. I believe they're powering ion cannons.
Herorius had joined Shadow Wing at Dibron 3, when that world had been engulfed by this second Operation Cinder. Soren could only assume the man was remembering what had happened there, though the 20-year veteran was too professional to show it.
Very well. Send the order to move in. The escorts will take position near the moons. Commander Bruch will lead the TIEs into the atmosphere.
The bridge, previously silent save for the hum of machinery and the chime of consoles, was filled with the susurrus of crew relaying orders and transmitting queries. The updates scrolling down the view screen altered in color and intensity as TIE squadrons set course and larger vessels readied covering fire. The Yadiz's escorts included a pair of refitted and undercrewed Raider-class corvettes, a pirate gunship hauled out of the evidence yards of Dibron, and a surveillance vessel stripped to the bone and rebuilt for combat. The TIE squadrons were Imperial standard only in comparison, with approved assemblies replaced by a technological patchwork and once-uniform squadrons of base-model TIEs freely mixing interceptors, bombers, strikers, and other esoteric designs looted from the 204th's victims. No ship in Shadow Wing had the raw firepower to turn Fedovoy End lifeless. But improvisation had been the skill to learn ever since the Battle of Endor, and the first Operation Cinder had proved that every planet had its weakness.
The TIEs are going straight to the capital?
His aide asked, behind and to the right of Soren.
Simplest to eliminate the planetary defenses before turning to the real work, Soren answered.
Simplest, maybe. What about the advantages of panic?
Soren arched his brow and turned about. Lieutenant Erica Quell stood with her arms folded across her chest, dressed in a loose shirt of dark fabric that did little to hide how gaunt she really was. When he'd first met the woman, she'd struck him as narrow but sturdy, like a steel beam. Now the steel had been cut and burned away until it was a razor mesh.
Explain,
Soren said, with the curt command of an instructor to a student.
They sent their heavy firepower at us already. They're no real threat except at short range. Hit the polar regions first and they'll piece together our plan, but won't have the mobility to stop us. The longer we work, the more afraid they'll become. They'll be primed to make mistakes.
They'll also have time to prepare,
Soren said.
Suppose our assessment of their capabilities is off. When we finally do strike the capital, we could lose TIEs. We could lose pilots.
Quell blinked bloodshot eyes almost concealed behind strands of hair.
Or we could find the Yomo Council already deposed. The planet can't possibly be stable. Terrified civilians and loyalists might work together if we buy them time.
Soren weighed the argument. There was merit to it, along with risk. Quell was asking to introduce unknown elements into an equation nearly solved, and yet...
Very well,
Soren said. Over the past weeks, he had learned to appreciate Quell's instincts, if not always trust them. He turned away too quickly to spot Quell's reaction, though he imagined her expression would stay flat, as it had since she'd arrived aboard the Yadiz. He called new commands to Herorius, and the voices on the bridge shifted subtly in timbre, while the updates on the view screen continued scrolling. He waited a minute, then two, studying the battlefield for anything out of the ordinary. A secondary force hidden on one of the moons, a buried planetary defense network with superior range to the ion cannons, and saw nothing to concern him. The first TIE bombers approached the northern ice cap. Soren adjusted the bridge comm and listened to Commander Bruch order bombs released above the target zone. Images transmitted from the TIEs showed ice shattering, flashing into steam in an instant. Larger ice sheets around the rim of the bomb crater collapsed into the hole, which in turn released a billowing fog, gases trapped underground for millennia, now freed.
Soren turned from the screen and gestured to Nenvez.
Summon me if I'm required,
he said, and marched to the hatch leading from the bridge to the central corridor. He heard footsteps following him, but did not look back. 6 meters into the narrow passage, out of hearing range of the bridge crew, Soren heard Quell's voice again.
You're not supervising?
He kept walking.
I'm not.
It's a combat operation.
Until a counterattack begins, it's a geoengineering project.
There was an edge to her voice.
You're their commander.
And they have their orders. I have faith that they will execute them without my meticulous oversight, and I have other duties that require attention.
Genocide, Soren thought, was an onerous task without a Death Star to quicken it. The first Operation Cinder had involved weather control satellites and ground quakes and artificial tsunamis. Fedovoy End would find its atmosphere gradually poisoned as the ties opened up more and more gas pockets. The planet's military bases would naturally be protected against chemical attacks, but Shadow Wing could neutralize those bases via the traditional methods. The population was small enough that they were few in number. He wondered whether the psychological toll of such an operation was greater than that placed on the Death Star gunners who eliminated billions with the throw of a lever. He quashed the thought before it got out of hand. It would lead to unpleasant and unsatisfying places, while leaving him no choice but to continue. He resumed walking. The footsteps did not follow. He flicked his hand.
Come, if you like, Lieutenant. I could use your perspective.
Of course,
Quell said. She sounded chastened, but professional as ever. They maneuvered through the ship, squeezing down hatches and ducking beneath conduits and piping. The fragrance of old metal became masked by the aroma of boiled vegetables and mashed grains, then by sweat, and finally by oil as they passed the galley, crew billets, and engineering bay in turn. A Star Destroyer's oxygen systems were built to neutralize odor. The century-old bulk freighter was less luxurious. When Soren reached his cabin, he punched in his access code 3 times before the locking mechanism pinged, and the door slid back a whole 2 centimeters. He had to haul it open the rest of the way. Inside, he took a single step to reach his desk chair and waved Quell to a seat on his bunk. He raised his terminal screen and scanned the feed.
You wanted to talk?
Quell asked.
Tell me again,
he said, looking directly at her for the first time since the bridge.
About traitor's remorse.
What about it?
She attempted to conceal her wariness without success, doubtless concerned he was testing her. Maybe he was. After all, Erica Quell was something of an enigma, though his conscious reasons involved no duplicity or subterfuge.
You said before that those like yourself, the Imperials who defected to the New Republic but who weren't selected to serve, were left in limbo, almost forgotten in the camp.
That's right.
That was months ago. What do you think has become of them?
Are they still there, you mean?
Quell waited. Soren nodded and she went on.
Maybe not there, but probably still in limbo. I doubt the New Republic is taking many new defectors this long after Endor. In that case, they might have closed down Traitor's Remorse altogether, transferred the dregs over to a permanent facility with whoever else they plan to put on trial and punish.
Would they have tightened security after you escaped?
It's possible. I doubt they cared enough to expend the resources.
Soren nodded again, studying Quell and allowing his thoughts to wander. When she spoke about Traitor's Remorse, she spoke with the detachment of an analyst, not the passion of someone who had experienced its indignities. That was no surprise. Quell would never admit to a loss of control, would fight to preserve her stoic dignity in the presence of a superior officer, but it left a veil between them he was unable to penetrate. Soren was responsible for sending Quell to Traitor's Remorse in the first place, for telling her that the war was lost, that she would destroy herself if she remained with the 204th in the aftermath of the first Cinder, and ultimately insisting that she defect. Afterward, he himself had deserted the unit in a misguided effort to set an example, and while Quell had been confined and interrogated, awaiting sentencing while rebels recruited their pick of her colleagues, he had become the Wanderer Devon. In their time away from Shadow Wing, Devon and Quell had both learned that the New Republic was not a forgiving place. While Devon had returned to the 204th upon learning of the tragedy at Pandem Nai, a New Republic aggression that had killed Colonel Shikara Nerys and nearly destroyed a planet, Quell had been left rotting until she'd given up all hope of starting a new life under Chancellor Mothma's regime. She had escaped, she'd told Soren, and located Shadow Wing in Cerberon. Since then, he'd vetted her story as well as he could, finding it plausible enough. There were gaps, to be sure, intentional omissions and obfuscations suggesting a more complicated truth. Yet he perceived a core of sincerity in her, and she remained his responsibility. He'd offered her a place as his aide. She was a pilot at heart, but first there had been no TIE available for her to fly. Then, when 3 damaged TIE Strikers had been salvaged and added to the unit, she'd claimed that other pilots were in greater need of the vessels. She was clearly traumatized and avoiding combat. Soren didn't hold that against her, yet he didn't understand the extent of how she'd changed, or what his own changes meant for their relationship as mentor and student.
"They've begun the show trials," Soren said.
He was unsure how long he'd been musing. Quell showed only polite interest.
"Farah Yadiz is being paraded before a court and accused of gross violations of sentient rights. As if being the last governor of Cerberon requires she bear the burden of all her predecessor's sins."
He lowered his gaze to his terminal again, skimmed a dozen lines of news copy and code.
"I don't doubt there are Imperial soldiers who've done appalling things, but what are the odds that the rebels can judge the fates of their enemies fairly?"
"Is that a rhetorical question?" Quell asked.
"It's not. You've been closer to New Republic justice than I have."
She acknowledged this with a grimace.
"I'm not sure what fair or just mean under the circumstances."
"Do you believe that the Empire was just?"
Soren asked. He might have added,
"That the destruction of Necronus or Fedovoy End is just?"
But it would only have injured Quell, not enlightened her.
"No," she said.
"Then you must believe that fairness, justice, whatever they are, represent more than the mere whims of whatever political power dominates."
"I suppose I must," she conceded. "I can't think of what."
"Then focus on the question. Can the rebels judge the fates of their enemies fairly?"
Quell's expression shifted from resignation to bitter amusement. It was the look of a woman who'd lost a game while admiring the artistry of her defeat.
"No, I don't think they can."
"Yet they will judge us nonetheless, and as we attempt to elude their justice, we will make of ourselves..."
Soren raised a hand, about to gesture to the bulkheads and the stars beyond, and the pointless atrocity taking place on the planet. Quell watched him with a keenness bordering on longing, but though he knew she was sick of bloodshed, oversaturated with death, he no longer knew her well enough to trust her with words that might be treasonous. He was spared the choice by a sound from the corridor. The cabin's lock hummed, and the door slid open its 2 centimeters. Quell stood from the bed, and Soren gestured for her to remain as he rose and stepped to the doorway. He saw nothing through the crack. There was no further sound. With a quick, forceful move, he pulled the door aside and revealed a figure in a red robe with a fractured plate of glass in place of a face. One arm dangled at its side, severed midway between elbow and shoulder. The figure was utterly still except for the robe's hem, which swirled lightly above the floor around absent feet. As if revealed by lightning, a withered face flickered into view behind the faceplate before vanishing.
"Defiance!"
a voice shrieked.
"Defiance! Defiance!"
The face had been the face of the dead Emperor Palpatine, but the voice had not.
"What does it want?" Quell asked.
"Nothing it can tell us,"
Soren said.
If the Emperor's messenger still carries a message, it is locked within the thing's synthetic brain.
The machine remained in the doorway for another moment. Then, as if insulted, it turned and drifted down the corridor. Soren felt his heart pumping and let out a hiss of breath. Once he had believed himself rid of the messenger, the herald of Operation Cinder, the embodiment of everything corrupt about the Empire as it had been, haunting Shadow Wings since the Battle of Endor. He had believed himself rid of it, but it had come back. When he had succumbed to fury and cracked its faceplate, it had done nothing. Though it was small solace, he was grateful his people were too consumed by their mission to treat the machine as an icon of worship anymore. He recalled the sight of Nord Kadende aboard the Eri, spilling blood before the messenger in a perverse offering. The trials of Cerberon had refocused the unit on survival, and since then the work of Cinder, the grueling everyday work of serving the Empire, of reuniting with allies and taking part in the fleet's grand strategy, had distracted idle minds from superstition, at least for the time being. Isolation had brought confusion. Hierarchy brought clarity. How readily Shadow Wing had accepted the new Cinder, he thought. They were too grateful for direction to doubt the nature of their tasks for long.
Go,
Soren said to Quell.
Sir?
He stepped away from the open door and forced the barest hint of a smile to indicate that Quell wasn't at fault for his abrupt shift in tone.
You should rest. If Fedovoy End is as straightforward as it appears, then it's an opportunity to recuperate. There are other missions coming. They will be more challenging.
Quell watched him. He half expected her to ask, "What missions?" But she nodded at last and strode past him into the corridor. Soren shut the door behind her. There was a great deal that deserved his attention. The updates, rumors, and decaying news feeds from across the galaxy on his screen. The massacre happening beyond the bulkheads of the Yadiz. The question of Quell, and what to expect from her. But all he could think about was the voice of the machine saying, "Defiance. Defiance. Defiance." Chapter 3. The Kuntavarian Fall. Ballad. Unknown provenance. 1.
This is Colonel Soren Keyes of the 204th Imperial Fighter Wing and the carrier Yadiz. In response to the Yomo Council's treasonous actions, its defiance of Grand Admiral Sloan's order to direct assets to the Daelgoth sector, its refusal to acknowledge the Empire's rightful regent on Coruscant, and its alliance with the Shi'ar Tun Syndicate, among others, we have been sent to bring retribution to your world.
The speaker's dark hair framed an angular, thin-lipped face, and his voice had the timbre of a coroner reciting an autopsy report. Hera Syndulla barely watched him. She'd seen the holo recording 3 times already, and what mattered was how the rest of the room reacted to its horrors. Seated around the dark conference table were Will Lark, Kairos, Chasna Chattuck, and Nath Tenzant, the remaining members of what Cairn Aiden had called the New Republic Intelligence Working Group on the 204th Imperial Fighter Wing. Each was silent, face lit by the Hollow's blue glow. Hera peered at them as if the intensity would allow her to penetrate their skulls, to understand why Will and Nath sat so far apart, why Chasna Chattuck clenched her jaw so tight while staring blankly into space, why Kairos's outstretched hand twitched as if she were a blind woman tracing the contours of Keyes' face. She didn't doubt they were disturbed, but she needed to know whether they were ready. The recording pronounced its final threat, and the Hollow flashed out of existence. The lights of the Deliverance's conference room rose. The pilots shifted and straightened, and Hera broke the silence. "That recording is now 3 days old," she said. It was repeating on a channel we accessed through that Imperial convoy we found, like someone left it as a warning. We haven't received word on the status of Fedovoy End, but we can only assume Shadow Wing has come and gone. She went on, suppressing the outrage she felt and keeping her voice level. At last count, Fedovoy End housed 500,000 troops and their families. It was primarily a military outpost, it's true, but we haven't seen slaughter of this sort since Operation Cinder. Nath grunted as if none of it surprised him. Kairos flattened both hands a centimeter above the tabletop.
The Empire is eating its own, Chas said.
Yes, Hera agreed. The Loyalists have gone to war with the Breakaway factions. Civilians caught in the crossfire be damned.
Soren Keyes, Will said. We've heard that name before.
He wasn't grieving. He was focused. Good, she thought. I know it's hard. We have, Hera began, but Nath raised a finger and she prompted him with a nod.
Intelligence sent over the files about an hour ago,
Nath said.
Soren Keyes, Colonel Shikara Nerys's second in command. Ace pilot, been in the game close to 20 years, trained most of the Shadow Wing lifers. Last we'd heard, he was Major Keyes, but...
But we also thought he was dead, Will finished.
Nath grunted again.
That's what Quell told us. Back at Pandem Nye, he definitely wasn't around. Taking out Nerys really did leave the unit headless. What we didn't know was that Aiden had a lead suggesting Keyes was alive and elsewhere.
Suggesting Erica Quell lied about her mentor, the same way she lied about participating in Operation Cinder. The thought came to Hera with a pang of frustration and resentment, along with the weight of grief. Whatever Erica Quell's failings, and they had been many, she had been Hera's charge, and Quell's involvement in the genocide of Necronus had been revealed only hours before her death. Hera didn't know what she'd have done if she'd been on the scene, whether she'd have embraced the woman, imprisoned her for her crimes, or both. And if that's what you're thinking, imagine how the others feel.
Aiden knew?
Kairos asked, barely loud enough to hear.
He had people looking into Quell's background,
Nath said,
and they stumbled onto Keyes. Apparently, he left Shadow Wing after Necronus, around the same time Quell did. They traced him to a mud heap of a world called Vernid, I think. He'd changed his name, took up work on a dig rig. We never figured out what he was up to. When intelligence caught up with him, he killed a pair of agents and disappeared.
Nath shifted his bulk, folding his arms across his chest.
We don't know when he rejoined Shadow Wing, but Nasha Gravis and her people have been sifting through evidence from Troyth. Street cam footage, bio traces, anything from when Shadow Wing was grounded. Put it all together, and it's pretty clear Keyes was in charge at least that far back.
Chas arched her brow.
So we can blame Keyes for everything that happened? Blowing up the Lodestar? Shooting my ship?
Seems like,
Nath agreed.
So we can also blame Aiden for leaving us in the dark? About Keyes? About Quell?
Chas's eyes glinted.
Or maybe we just blame Quell for not mentioning that her mass-murdering boss was still around.
Chas, Hera began. Scolding the woman would only make tempers flare, but she didn't like the direction the briefing was headed. Will cut in.
On Vernid, could he have deserted? Was Keyes trying to go straight?
Chas laughed.
He sure isn't now.
Suppose it's possible,
Nath said.
But I agree with Chas. Vernid was a while ago, and at the moment...
He waved a hand as if to sum up the Hollow's message. The conversation dissolved into chaos. Nath leaned back in his seat and speculated about Keyes' connections to the main Imperial fleet. Chas sneered about Quell's secrets and those of New Republic intelligence. Will asked how Keyes' presence might change the 204th's tactics, even as he surreptitiously pulled up data on Fedovoy End and its population centers.
It's happening again,
Kairos said, and no one seemed to hear but Hera. Nath and Chas kept talking.
It's
happening again? Kairos repeated, this time in a hoarse shout. The others fell silent. Hera nodded slowly. They're killing worlds again. Yes. This acknowledgement appeared to satisfy Kairos. She stared at the tabletop.
How many?
Will asked. Now Hera saw he was giving in to grief, and she couldn't blame him.
Do we know? Is Fedovoy End the first?
We don't have confirmation, but Captain Misk, the convoy leader, suggested at least 3 planets have fallen. Hera rose to her feet. The meeting was hers again, though she wasn't sure she wanted it. Dibron 3, Kortatka, and now Fedovoy End. They've all gone silent. They fit similar profiles, and they're practically in a straight line for anyone traveling through this region.
Do we know where they're going next?
Will asked. Nath attempted to answer. This time Hera didn't allow it. Not yet, she said. The comm network is unstable this far outside the core. Makes it hard to pull updates from New Republic worlds, let alone Imperial ones, and we don't have enough recent intelligence. But we can assume Shadow Wing will continue their mission to wipe out any planet occupied by breakaway Imperial factions, and to that end... She drew a breath and released it. Our mission is now to stop them. To save the lives of their intended victims. She watched their expressions as they began to comprehend.
All right,
Will said, soft and resolved.
But what about Fedovoy End and the others?
The ships we left in Nithlide were scheduled to rendezvous with us after operations there wrapped up. I'm rerouting them to look for survivors, Hera said. That means the Deliverance is on its own for a while. Hera saw Nath look to Chas, then Kairos. The Thelan was shaking her head as if swaying in a gentle breeze. Kairos was tracing invisible lines above the tabletop, describing what might have been star systems and hyperlanes. Nath finally shrugged and said,
"This plan have Senate authorization?"
Will started to say something, but Nath wasn't finished.
"We're talking about swooping in to defend Imperial strongholds, risking our forces to protect an enemy."
"To hell with that," Chas muttered.
"There are civilians on those planets."
Will's voice was calm but insistent.
"Even if there weren't."
Chas kept speaking under her breath.
"Civilians who've stood with the Empire for the entire year they've been..."
Will spoke over her.
"We'd still have an obligation to..." "I wasn't arguing,"
Nath said.
"Asking a question is all."
"Worlds bleed,"
Kairos whispered.
"Stars bleed.
Enough!" Hera was still standing, and the snap of her voice demanded the other's attention.
"This isn't a discussion. I command this unit, and we're not going to stand by while Shadow Wing commits new massacres or recruits fresh forces. The plan is this. We head straight past Fedovoy End, picking up the trail based on our best guess as to the next target and any fresh intel that comes in. You all need to start working toward that goal, and be ready to fly."
No one argued, which was about as much as Hera could have hoped for. 5 minutes later, the conference was over, and she was slumping down with her elbows on the table. She'd avoided the worst outcome through bluster and force of will. No one pointed out that she hadn't answered Nath's query about Senate authorization or asked what sort of intelligence she was expecting that would lead them to Shadow Wing. As to the first, Hera believed in democracy, in the New Republic Senate, and in Chancellor Mon Mothma. But she also knew that expending New Republic lives to save unrepentant Imperials would cause controversy at the Capitol. She'd take the consequences as they came. As to the second, New Republic intelligence had brought them into this area of the galaxy thanks to lucky comm intercepts. Expecting continuing good fortune to stop Shadow Wing was a fool's game. But luck was the only weapon in her arsenal right now. At least, she thought grimly, Soren Keyes wouldn't be a problem if they couldn't catch the 204th at all. 2. Chas Nechatic left the conference room as soon as she was able,
standing fast enough to induce vertigo once Syndulla had finished her speech. Outside, she shouldered her way past complaining engineers and flight officers and data workers, then stabbed the turbo lift button at the corridor's end a dozen times over.
Screw the Star Destroyer. Screw Syndulla. Screw Colonel Keyes and Shadowwing and Erica Quell and everyone who stands with monsters.
She was on a garbage mission, working for garbage people, on a warship built by an empire that seemed more like the New Republic every day. An empire they were apparently now fighting to protect.
One oppressor is the same as another, a voice said inside her mind.
She thought at first it was her voice, but it wasn't. It smelled like attar and petrichor, like fungus blooming on a perfumed face.
But that's not what you're angry about.
She was in the turbo lift now, waiting for the car to activate.
I don't need something to be angry about, she mumbled. It's what makes me so lovable.
The turbo lift hummed. She pictured Colonel Keyes' head on fire and found it less satisfying than she'd hoped. The voice in her mind said,
The Force wants the flourishing of life, tranquility, community. Yet the ruling powers only fight and lie to you and eat one another alive. Where is your community, Maya Halleck?
Her dizziness had passed. Her heart rate had decreased. She left the turbo lift and walked into the hangar bay, where half-dismantled tie racks hung like abstract sculptures in a corporate lobby, and the ground crews scurried around New Republic starfighters. Sergeant Ragnell yelled something in Chass's direction. A warning, maybe? And Chass sidestepped a load lifter before reaching her destination. The hangar wasn't private, but the cockpit of her B-wing was. She ascended the ladder, dropped into the frayed seat, and closed the canopy above her. The chatter of the ground